The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. I'd like to thank this evening's presenters, Rabbi Zev Freundlich, Rabbi Yitzchak Goldberg, Rabbi Yossi Feintuch, and Rabbi Reuven Kamen, Dr. David Lieberman, Mr. Barry Wolanski, Mr. Philip Rosenthal, and Mr. Gavriel Fagan. I'd like to thank the Priority One staff headed by Yaakov Smith and Yechiel Zlotnik, who really worked day and night to put this event together. And they were assisted by Ari Berger and Mrs. Bachrach and Rabbi Ari Chait. And really, the whole operation, it was weeks and weeks in the planning and infinite details, which Baruch Hashem I knew and know nothing about. And we're certainly extremely grateful to them, literal Mesiras Nefesh, to make this happen. I'd like to thank the keynote speakers this evening, Rabbi Yaakov Bender and Dr. David Pelkovitz, for taking time from their very busy schedules to join us, as you will hear them shortly. Thank all of the sponsors, the Yated Ne'eman, the Amodia, the Jewish Press, the Five Towns Jewish Times, and remind everyone to look online for the audio of the expo and other audio and publications at priorityone.org, www.priorityone.org. I think that this evening is a testimony to a very significant realization. And I believe that realization has been in the making over many years, but it's finally, Baruch Hashem, coming to fruition. And that is that the art, that the role, that the responsibility of parenting is not something that comes just naturally. It's certainly a very serious responsibility. It's certainly a very difficult one to fulfill in our world, which poses so many challenges and difficulties and obstacles and temptations for our children and for ourselves. And I believe that the message that this group is giving forth to the broader community this evening is that we want to learn more about parenting. Is that we realize that even though we've parented a number of children to date, we may have a few more to go, but there's so much to learn because the sugya is so deep. The cherished lives of our children are at stake. And the challenges that face them every day increase and expand in dimensions and proportions and in ugliness and obscenity beyond anyone's possible comprehension or belief. I think that this evening testifies to a belief on the part of so many parents is that any lessons that we may have learned about parenting or about the temptations facing children from our high school days are irrelevant. Is that the generation gap is skipping a few generations at a time. And unless we stay posted and current and updated as to what's going on in the world today and into what exposures that our children are facing, despite how insular we may believe that our community or our homes are insulated, then we're making a terrible, terrible, grievous error. We live in a dangerous world. We live in a challenging world. We live in a pressurized world. And anything and everything that we can learn about that world learn about our children, learn about the challenges they face, new ideas that we can hear from people, sharing experiences and insights can make the difference with the future of our children. It's our hope and prayer that this testimony that you people have attested to this evening will go out to the broader community in the New York metropolitan area, beyond to the country and beyond to the world, to send the message that just as we learn the halachos and the mitzvahs about an esrog and about a lulav and about all of the mitzvahs haTorah, so too parenting has to be studied and restudied and reviewed and revisited and reevaluated constantly. We can't rely on the lessons that we learned from previous children because our next child is growing up in a different world. And we know that no matter how good our intentions are as parents, unless we are going to avail ourselves of every piece of information and inspiration, knowledge, and wisdom and insight, we may fall short in conveying that power of Torah, that power of a life of Yiddishkeit, that passion that we may have for our Yiddishkeit to the next generation. And we hope and pray that this will just be the first of many such events. There is information out there about a number of other workshops and lectures and seminars that are taking place for parents and for mechanchim, which are dealing with many general and many specific issues that are of serious concern to us as parents for the security and the safety and the welfare and the future of our children. We're certainly appreciative of everyone here this evening who has joined with us to bring forth this message of how serious the issue of training is. If we have to be trained and licensed to become a lawyer, if we have to be trained and licensed to become a doctor, if we have to be trained and licensed to become a barber, al achas kama v'kama, what we need to serve our children, our most precious children, well, as appropriate parents, role models, teachers, and those that pave the derech for them for the future. So we thank you all again for participating here this evening. It's now my honor to introduce an individual who has truly been a pioneer in the field of, not just of general chinuch, but in a chinuch that has been for decades sensitive to the individual different types of students, to the individual needs of the students, a pioneer in teaching others how we have to tailor-make our programs to service the different types of students that we have, and to service them and to serve them with love and dedication. I wouldn't want to remind the speaker of what he had to go through with some of my children when they were in his yeshiva. I hope he doesn't remember. So it's truly an honor to present Rabbi Yaakov Bender, the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Darchei Torah.
I appreciate your kind words. Rishur Sagoyin, Rishai Cohen. Not a question to Yid. If there's one Jew that has brought problems that were shoved under the carpet for years and years and years, for decades, and is responsible for opening up the world, Pasha, to the problems that exist out there and what we can do to help them as this individual, what's happening here tonight is nothing short of extraordinary, very, very special. Credit to you and your organization, the Design Gebenst, for a longer good, and continue to do your Avodas HaKadosh. I joined the world of chinuch, I think, about 30 years ago. So I was quite young then. I'm still young, but I was quite young then, and I felt I was a little bit... I became a principal yet before I was 30 years old, and a couple of years before that, and I felt I needed to learn a lot about principling, how it works, what to do, etc. So I visited 20 yeshivas in the area between the approximately Purim time and the coming year to visit other yeshivas. And I visited what I consider to be, top menalim, people who are in the business for a long time. I didn't take statistics. I wish I had. Because there's one specific thing that I heard from Kemat, I would say, 70, 60, 70, 80% of the principals. And that was unanimous amongst those. Parents are crazy. Parents are crazy. Parents in the Meshuggah. They want this and they want that and they want this and they want that. I want to say, first of all, 30 years since then, things have changed tremendously. I think schools understand parents are not crazy. Parents are talking about their own child, their own children. And Rebbeim have learned to recognize, Rebbeim today are really tremendous. They've learned to recognize that there are 25 sets of needs in any class, and a classroom can be a very, very cruel place, can be very difficult for a Rebbe or a Mora, a teacher, to teach children in one room, and they have different sets of needs. When a parent calls, that's what's so terrific about this evening, when a parent calls a Rebbe or a principal, he's calling even his own child, her own child. What's wrong with that? And very often, oftentimes, the needs of that child doesn't fit with the needs of the rest of the class. So, of course, it's difficult for principals sometimes. It's difficult for a Rebbe, difficult for a teacher. But there's nothing wrong with you as a parent making sure that the Rebbe and the teacher understand who your child is. And that's a very, very big part of parenting, staying in touch with the school. I think schools are happy today to have the input. I think it's important, if you know something about your child, don't hide it. Let the Rebbe know, let the teacher know, let the school know. My mother, Elias Shalom, was a teacher of Mizrachi for 61 years. She was very fond of the following parable that she would say over all the time to both Rebbeim, Moras, and parents. I think it holds true any time. And she said the following. We as parents are dealing with neshamas. Dealing with neshamas, that's our business. Our children, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, whatever kids we have in our house, same for Rebbeim. Same with teachers, we're dealing with the Shamas. But we have to be very, very careful about when you start dealing with something on a daily basis, you become rogel. It becomes norm. And just like she used to say, in a glass factory, if you ever visited the old fashioned, not the fancy ones today where everything is perfect, an old glass shop, you'd walk into a glass shop and they're working on developing and making and blowing, whatever they're doing over there, a drinking glass, a bottle, whatever it is. And all over the floor, there are shards of glass. That's normal. Because that's what the shop was like. I remember going into printing shops when I was a child in Williamsburg, before you had today everything is done so neat and so clean on a computer. You don't have the printing shops of yesteryear. You'd walk in, you had to climb over the boxes, you had to step all over each other, and all over the floor where the papers used to cut at the end, the margins, whatever it was. And you stepped on paper all the time. It was normal. You stepped on paper all the time because that's what a printing shop was all about. That's what a glass shop is all about. But we have to be very, very careful about when we're used to children, and we are as parents or as schools, not to step on those neshamas. It's very easy. Because we deal with them on a daily basis. They're not glass. They're not paper. They're people. And sometimes we're not here to put fright into anybody, to any one particular item, but the wrong thing at the wrong time can hurt a child very, very badly. And that's what we have to be very, very careful about as parents, as melamdim, as moros. To be very, very careful on each thing, and that's why parenting and getting together and learning skills are very important to make it part of you, part of what you are, who you are. Not just fly-by-night parenting. To know exactly what you can do, because the problems can come up, and you want to be very, 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 very careful. Unadulterated love. I think an item that's very, very important to speak about. There's no need. I'm not exactly sure, and I want to be very careful when I say this. I want to wait. Why parents can't just get that love expressed at all time. Unadulterated love means children are running into problems. That's what we're here today about. We're running in sometimes. There's many young parents here who don't have that matzav yet, Baruch Hashem. I hope you never have the matzav. The key, I think, to parenting is that the child has to feel, even when you're disciplining the child, that you love that child. We're living in an age of technology. To me, that's, I think, the biggest korban out there. For the reasons Rabbi Cohen alluded to before, obviously, there's stuff out there that could chop a child in seconds. On my way here today, I'm telling you, Maisa Shehoya. I'm away, and my wife really calls me in the car. That's where I have my phone, by the way. I'm very proud of the fact that I'm the last Meshuggah on the left that doesn't carry a phone. I think it's a Meshuggah. I think phones are a terrible, terrible thing. We'll get to that in a moment. And I have a phone in the car in case you need one for emergencies. My wife really calls me. Try to listen to CDs, the tapes of the car. She tells me, I just got a phone call from the Rebbetzin of a famous, famous Manal of Yeshiva. And we've been talking about these in Yon and Arikon, alluded to, I said before, what's beckoning to the children out there today, as if like a Morning America. And she says to my wife, is your husband still home? Because there were a couple of signs hanging about tonight's event. A few of them, a few advertisements only. Anyways, so there was, so she says, he's still home? I said, no, but I know this story just happened. My son, a sixth grader, was home playing with another child. And they were making a call. They wanted to call the Lego company. I think a story that I heard from my wife on the phone on the way here tonight. They made make the phone to the Lego company. They were calling Lego. There's a souvenir, an advertisement in the box that came in there. If you call, if you want something else, you can get something. So they were calling Lego. Was their thing they were playing with. And they dialed the wrong number. It was an 800 number. I think they dialed 900. I don't have the details in the story. My wife told me the story in the car. And this woman is the wife of a Manal who's running a very large yeshiva. You would think that they know, they're not so naive to, you know, they know what's going on. And the mother was crazed. I must speak to your husband. He must speak about the following topic. What happened? They dialed the wrong number, and they got a tape, and the kids, sixth graders, they were innocent sixth graders, started hearing all kinds of junk and garbage. And they dropped the phone, and they called over the mother, this Rebbetzin. She picks up the phone, and she couldn't believe what she was hearing. And this is someone whose husband is involved in the chinuch. We were all, it's frightening out there. That's what we're speaking about, but there's much more than that. It's frightening how we're letting technology take over our homes. It's frightening how we're letting that, you pardon me, I say using Yiddish, that's a shtunk in a cell phone, take over our lives. Kids will tell me in yeshiva they can't talk to their parents. They're always on the phone. Why? We lived without the phone. You know, we lived without the phone for many, many, many years, Baruch Hashem, and we have to answer every phone call that comes in. There's nothing more important than you listening to your children. When the fathers come home from work, you've had a long day, and I know it's a long day. I have a long day too. Your kids are there waiting for you. They want to talk to you. They want you to listen to them. Mothers, I mean, you see that you drive through the streets. I imagine that's no different for Rockaway and Lawrence than it is in Brooklyn today. And women are exercising one hand on the phone, and the kids walking. The phone is part and parcel of all of us. It's a wonderful thing when it's needed to be. There should be a time at night when those kids come home, the phones are gone. We were kids, I remember the argument in the house sometimes, you know, whether or not we should take the phone off the hook. The Shiloh were taking the phone off the hook. Today, what's off the hook? People carry two phones, they're tied to the phones. There's nothing more important than giving your children time and listening to them. If you're not going to listen to them now, you know, you're going to have charata later on. It's going to bother you. I'm not giving no brachas over here, chas v'shalom, that these things shouldn't happen, but you must see to it that they have time for you. Take them out. I'm driving down Central Avenue one night. I see a prominent representative in the community, and she's walking at night. This is about 9 o'clock at night with one of her children. So I'm not the shy type, so I see she's walking. I pull over the car, the Central Avenue is about a 20-minute walk, 25-minute walk to where the stores are. I said, Rebbetzin, maybe we need a ride. Nope. Thank you, Rebbe. I don't need a ride. Baruch Hashem, I thought maybe the car broke down, something. It didn't even dawn on me what she's going to tell me. The next day, she calls me up. She has wonderful children, by the way, really wonderful children. I figured it out the next day. I want to apologize to you. I was rather abrupt with you when you pulled up your car to me, and I saw you, and you said to me, but he writes, I should have said thank you, I should have been more profuse, my thanks to you. I have a minik tov, my family. She has, I think, six children there. She takes out at least once every couple of months, each one of her kids separately, to spend 2 hours with that child. I said, you're apologizing to me. So she takes a walk with her. She's walking all the way in to Cedar, the area where we go shopping. A slice of pizza, whatever the case might be, she takes the kid out, and the kid has her undivided time. I'm Avtiach you, she doesn't have a phone. She doesn't have one. I know she doesn't have a phone. It's impossible to do that if you have your phone. It's not only the phone that's the Avera. Our kids need us. They need our time. It's critically important. That's the Yisoid Aleph of parenting. And if that love pours through, then the criticism that you want to give them at times because they're not doing the right thing will be able to come through. But if you don't have time for them, you won't have time when you really think you need the time. And that's a tremendous mistake. Computers. I'm telling you, what I'm talking about now is just for the last week. Phone call from a parent at the school. Erev Shabbos, no less. And talking and talking and talking, and it's Erev Shabbos, a short Friday. It was after school had ended already. It's about 12:30, 1 o'clock. Her husband's addicted to the computer. That's the bottom line. Bottom line is, forget about schmutz now. I'm not even talking about schmutz. When I talk about not having phones, I'm not even talking about phones that with the schmutz. I told you over a story that happened on the way here tonight that someone called me. I'm talking about just how can you function as a parent when you're busy with that computer. It's addictive. Yes, it is. Just like drugs are addictive, and alcohol are addictive. There's a new addiction today's day and age. It's called the computer. And you can spend hours and hours and hours and hours. If you're a father or you're a mother, you can sit at the computer. I once approached a parent about a computer. So when I was in a camp, a number of years ago, a computer was just coming out. And I told him, what are you doing? A parent, I sell on eBay. There's truths in the world. You're here tonight because you want to be good parents. I'm the spoiler, man. I'm the spoiler from seeing this oil, Reb Shaya. It's not pleasant. To seeing this oil move here tonight, and many people came early and left and so on. I would say, Clark, to maybe 1,000 people here today. And I'm the spoiler. So you want to do the right thing. There's nothing more important than giving your children time and listening to them and smothering them with love and attention. Love does not mean that everything is cushy too. Love means that everything you do in your house, your kids see, you mean for their tova. You mean for their good. That's what love and attention means. 90% of the problems would disappear. Strong statement to make. If we were there for our children from day one, from the time they're young little kids, right through without spending, you know, spending other things. Sarcasms, very briefly, I have 20 minutes, which I know that's the barrier. I don't want to tell me when I came up here, but I assumed. Sarcasm and cynicism, they're not your friends' children. They don't understand sarcasm. They don't understand cynicism. They're not your friends. Very, very important. They're your children who look up to you, who need you. I still need my mother. My mother was nifta 12 years ago. I'm telling you now that I'm, whatever I am in my 50s somewhere. And I'm not embarrassed to say, there were many a time till today, I'm very close to my mother. My father's a Kohen Lebrach HaKohen Lebrach HaKohen, I've yard said for him this Thursday, as if to 43 years ago, I was a kid. I was close to my mother. There are many times today that I want to call my mother. I can't. I'm married, Azeid Baruch Hashem. I'm a big macher, you know, writing the newspapers, and I'm here, and drushes, I'm great, world renowned. You're right, coming with all the introductions here. Great, Givaldic. I want my mama. My mama versteht. She understood me. She knew me. She knew everything about me. I went to her for advice constantly. Constantly, those years that I had with her, Baruch Hashem. I had seven wonderful, wonderful years with her. What do I mean, seven? Because I was 15 years old, my father was nifta. And I had this chus, I'm learning at that time in Yeshiva Philadelphia. I had the great chus of becoming my mother's roommate for 7 years, until I got married. And those 7 years were wonderful. We made a connection, and she became my mama. And I really got very close to her, and I went there for advice constantly. And my mom always didn't mind, she understood for some reason. I go to my shvarish really, till today I speak to them. There's nothing that a parent can't do for a child. I go back to my in-laws now, and I went back to my mother all the time. And your children want you. They need you. They need just to know that you're there. They don't want you running around all night long. They don't want you running around the wall. Every Shabbos, different houses. There's a new, and I even, every Shabbos, people got to run out to eat. Bar mitzvahs and Shabbos meals, inviting people to come on Shabbos for meals. You belong in one place, at home, with your children. Parenting begins in your Dalet Amos. In your mechitza, spend time with your children. Give them time. And I am mother. I heard it from Chashev Rav. Recently, I heard about this, that the Rav now neighbor for years and years was opposed to an Erev. I heard lately why he was opposed. Erev is a wonderful thing. It's tutzach. I understand women are stuck in the house, and I understand that I'm not putting it down. Women like to go out also, and I understand this. I'm not going into that holy site. The reason why he was against it was because he wanted parents to spend time with their children. They want them running here and running there, being all over the place, because parents belong at home. That's what we have to do. Just choosing a little bit because t- Today, I had a parent in my house. So I still don't have very often parents in my home rather than in yeshiva. It was clear to me. By the time the meeting that I'd finished with the parent was very, very clear to me. Holy shum suffered that this child was a carbon of being the oldest child. Oldest children are very important. There's no question about it. I can show you family after family that were the oldest child did very well, and the parents were rather, let's just say, no such thing as simple parents. But they were simpler type of people. And you see children growing up, they give father chutzis, chutzavis, and the children, parents maybe weren't so simple. But as an oldest child, it's a dynamo. That oldest child can have a tremendous effect. But if you want to make sure that your oldest child, the Rav Tzvi Shlomo Yeshuga in his head, keep telling him how important he is. Keep putting on that subtle pressure on him. I did it in a complimentary way. I told him in a very complimentary way that you're very good, you're very important, I need you, etc., etc., etc. It's gewaltig. You're putting on tremendous pressure on that child. You, fathers and mothers, I think that's the number one lesson of parenting is, really, have to realize that your children need you, chol yom, choleis, chol shev. They're outside playing. They have the comfort of knowing you're there at home. I have a letter here I want to read to you. It's a very old letter. I found it tonight. We're going to go over my notes preparing tonight. It's a true letter. I can't make this up. 11 years ago, now in yeshiva, Chabad Litzlan, it was a Welt tragedia, a world tragedy, where a father, Rahman al-Sana, had a heart attack, was nifter, young man, in his early 40s. And shortly thereafter, 11 months later, the mother was nifter also from a machla that she had already for 10, 11, 12 years before that. And large family of children were left over. Of course, none of them married yet. And it was a big pachat. I want to read you, I got a phone call from the Mora of one of the children. We had a few boys in our yeshiva, and the Mora in the school of one of the children, she tells about a letter that she received that day, handed to her by the child, but that letter says a tremendous amount, it's emotional. Some of you may get a little emotional from it. I every time I look at this letter, I get emotional about it. But it shows you how we can't let those years of parenting run by, as rabbis say. Ladies and gentlemen, you got to hear this. You are so critical. And every minute of your life, you should be thinking about your children and your spouses. That's a separate idiom. And Rav Shaya Kamek says that Shalom Bayis, we'll talk about that. But thinking about your spouses and your children at all times, even if you're doing something else, you could be working in Manhattan somewhere. Doesn't matter. Your children know that you're thinking about them at all times. It's strange, but this letter was written by this young lady a few months after her mother passed away, left without parents. The family is going to be divided up in different places. Dear Tati, dear Mommy and Tati, I'm not adding one single word, it's a little like pale, but they should have fixed it up a little bit. Dear Mommy and Tati, hand it to the Mora. You'll hear in a minute why she handed it that day. I miss you so very much. I can't wait, this girl was about 7 years old at the time. I can't wait until Mashiach comes, then I will get to see you. It will be much better when Mashiach comes. I miss you so very much, but I know it is for the good. I wonder how it is good. That Hashem makes things happen, and we do not know why it's good. But it is. We all miss you. As you know, when I go to sleep at night, I cry as a child writing because I miss you. I miss you both. As you also know, PTA is tonight. I hope you like what I got on my report card. Love, the child's name. The child is worrying about maybe on the report card. Who cares? Hope you like what I got. Children want to please their parents. Desperately. Your job is to make sure that they know that they're always pleasing you and that you're always there for them. No matter what happens, no matter what may chas v'shalom happen. I hope you like. That night, the mother told me, was PTA conferences. And well, the reminders are going out, of course. The reminders are going out to all the children. Tell your parents to come, your father, your mother. You also come to PTA conferences tonight. What's the child is thinking about? I can't show off. So what's our problem here tonight? At Baruch Hashem, we have kids. Some with problems. So? I have a boy that I try to visit every Sunday. His name is Yishol Simcha. Extraordinary child. And he has handicaps. Can't come to Yeshiva anymore, a few years already. I saw him tonight for a few minutes only. I asked him a few weeks ago, I asked him, how do you deal with the fact that you're watching all your friends run around and have a good time? He's 19 already. Driving, whatever they're doing, having a, playing ball, whatever they're doing, I'm learning and you can't do it. It's Givaldic. He answers me. I walked out of there happy. Happy and of course, emotionally drained. It is what it is. It is what it is, he says to me. This is it. So Hashem gave me this. I'm going to make the best of it. If a kid like that could tell you it is what it is, we as parents have to realize never to get upset at our children. We have to discipline them. They love you, that you love them back. And at all times, you know. At all times, you know. And that's what I try to tell the Rebbeim and the teachers in the school to do all the time. There's no time left. I want to speak a little bit about the interaction of Rebbeim, of interaction of school and home. That's the job of Rebbeim and teachers. That's the job of you as parents, to let them know that you're always going to be there for them. Let your children, your little girls, stand next to you when you light the Shabbos lecht. And if you cry a little bit, tell them why you're crying. I'm crying because I want to see nachas from you, not because anything's wrong. Because I'm looking forward to the day that I'll see you standing up here lighting candles, letting your own children stand next to you. And fathers, there's nothing wrong in telling your children how much you love them. Fathers can't get emotional, can't be too. That's for sure. Who said? Razak. Parents are the key to the children. Love them, appreciate them, show them how important they are to you. And you'll see, only Siat Nishmai, you'll see the problems disappear. Hatzlach and Bracha, thank you for inviting me to speak.
Over the last many years, as the problems in our communities have compounded themselves and unfolded, and oftentimes left us as parents and as machanchim in a state of confusion, not really understanding what's going on, not really having an idea of what we could do about it. I think more than anyone else, there's one individual who has been looked to as a guiding light, one whose wisdom and insight, both in a breadth of understanding of Chazal's approach to dealing with problems and human psychology and all of the information and research that's been done out there, and combining it together in such a cogent Torah approach for the problems that exist in our community. This one individual is an individual who gives of himself selflessly in a dimension which is beyond what anyone could imagine. He happens to be presently, I think, celebrating a family simcha, which he's, I guess, snuck out of to get over here. So it's really a very great privilege and honor to have Dr. David Belkovitz here with us this evening. His sensitivity, his caring, his love for all of our children and for helping us in any way possible has truly made him a leader, maybe the leader in this field, one to whom so many people turn. And I guess we wish we could just have more of him. And we're very, very honored to have Dr. David Belkowitz to speak with us here this evening. Dr. Belkowitz.
Thank you so much, Cohn. Just to echo Rabbi Bender's words, just look at this, it's amazing. And it says such wonderful things about our community. You know, it's I think it's so important to look at how the work of Rav Cohn has been consistently, you know, part of the solution of what we're looking for. Somebody once introduced me and said that he thought that the major risk for children today is that parents are never home because they're out at parenting programs. I really believe that it's important to take stock sometimes, to take a step back, to look, to hear from other people, and to feel less alone. My favorite gematria is that the gematria for the word Ava is the same as the gematria for the word Daiga. Right? Isn't that true? The love and warrior are inextricably intertwined. So I wasn't sure what to talk about tonight, so I got a message that Rabbi Cohn suggested that the title be The Three Essential Ingredients in Parenting, which I thought was a great title, because I get to talk about anything. And I still don't know what the three will be, but it's important sometimes to focus. Like, what's the essence here? So, in terms of the three, I'm going to bounce off of the beautiful, warm words of Rav Bender, and I'm going to talk about time, optimism, and chesed. That's what I'm going to talk about. And we'll see where it goes. Time, as Rabbi Bender was talking about, you don't need me to echo it, but I'll echo it. The research consistently shows that perhaps the number one predictor of how to raise children to internalize our values is time. It's time. It makes sense. It's the more time we spend with them, not necessarily directly teaching them. It's they're just knowing that there's nothing more important to us than to be with them and to steal time with them. There's the beautiful Kutzker that I've said before many times. Kachitzim b'yagibar came b'nei ha'na'urim. It says at the end of Tehillim that chinuch habanim is like being an archer. And the Kutzker asks, what's the connection between being an archer and raising children? And the answer is that just like an archer, the closer you hold the bow to your heart, the further and straighter the arrow goes. So too with raising our children. The closer we hold them to our heart, the further and straighter they go. But let me develop a couple of points on the time dimension. Beautiful insight from Rav Usher Weiss, I believe, in yesterday's Parsha on the phrase Al Odos Beno. So most people understand that Avram's fear of in terms of after sending Yishmael out, was he was worried about Yishmael, worried about what would be with him. But Rav Weiss says a brilliant, brilliant insight into parenting. He says, Al Odos Beno was a worry about Yitzchak. That what he was worried about is what's going to happen to Yitzchak being raised in a home without exposure to the tempering influence of Yishmael. He felt that Yishmael, that given Yitzchak's temperament, that it was a temperament of such purity and such kedusha, that maybe he needed the inoculating influences of Yishmael. And he was worried what would happen to Yitzchak without that. Incredible insight. I was thinking, in terms of the brilliant integration and synthesis that Yitzchak grew up with, you know, a home suffused with chesed, but a home where obviously Sarah had a somewhat different approach in terms of what she felt Yitzchak needed than Avram did. But they blended it together. It's interesting. I was part of a study last year where we looked at 1,500 marriages in the Frum community. And we asked people, what do you fight about? By the way, we asked people, if you had the same person to marry over again, would you? We asked them how satisfied they were with their marriages. And I felt I was on a high for about a month after the results came back. So when the results came back, it's, you know, I guess what kept rushing through my mind was Matovu Alecha Yaakov Mishkanosecha Yisrael. In a world where the divorce rate is approaching 50%, well over, close to 90% of couples describe their marriages as either something that they were very satisfied with or extremely satisfied with. Overwhelming majority talked about saying they would marry the same person over again. And it was in such contrast to what we're used to thinking about. And sure, people fought. And there was a lot of fighting. But the fighting took place within the framework of love. But you know what? The top three reasons people fought? Number one was time. There's just not enough time. Exactly what Rabbi Bender was talking about. Number two was conflict over child rearing. Sort of like differences of opinions about chinuch habanim. And I could go on about the other top six or seven Hall of Fame. That's not the point. The point is, how do you handle difference in philosophies in a way that the children are more likely to absorb the key points? And how do we do this all in a way that the children basically absorb the key lessons without being confused by them? Right? We all know. Otherwise, shalom bias issues could lead to the opposite of what we want. And I'll tell you a couple of quick vignettes. You know, we all know that every night a week that a parent has dinner together with their kids, there's lower risk for substance abuse. Very often cited study. There are many other studies like that. My favorite example is when I heard of Shmuel Kamenetsky. When cell phones first came out at the Torah Masorah Convention, he said he ossered cell phones. Because he said, if you have a cell phone when you're a Talmud in the Philadelphia Yeshiva, you're not a Talmud in the Philadelphia Yeshiva. Right? Brilliant insight. And it's so true. So true. Lately, I've been hearing from people about how so many adolescents are having their friendships be dominated by texting. They text each other all the time. And that's coming a dominant form of communication. My father pointed out to me that when you text on a cell phone, you look down. You make no eye contact. You think about Kamayim Panam El Panam Kein Leifa Adam, that the mode of human interaction as it's meant to be is with eye contact. What does it mean when the main mode of interaction is now with texting? And a Rebbe recently told me that he's sitting down in his class, where of course kids are not supposed to have cell phones, and all of a sudden one of the Talmidim in his yeshiva starts crying. And he calls him aside, says, "Why are you crying?" He said, "My father just texted me that my grandfather was Nifter." And I thought, oh, what's happened to us? What's happened to us that we could do that? It was just like something is off in terms of our understanding of modes of interactions. And in fact, even if you look beyond this, something as simple as family vacations, there's research that shows that when families take vacations together, it actually serves, that kind of time serves as a buffer against subsequent stresses. It cements the relationship. I'm always impressed by certain yeshivas that allow families to take vacations together, even when breaks in various yeshivas are different. So that if you have a daughter and a son, it's very hard to hold it together, but certain yeshivas have taken the leadership in allowing families to vacation together, because that's an important thing for collective memories and cementing that relationship. Let me end this section with a story, and then I'll go on to the other two ingredients. It's a little bit of an odd story. I never shared this story in this context before, but it's a story that I heard at a shiva. I always grow the most from what I learned in shiva visits, right? Shlomo Melech tells us about how much better a Beis Seivel is in terms of what matters. I was at a shiva for Rabbi Avitan. Many of us knew him, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. He was a Rav, he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, a tremendous Anav in Long Beach. And it was an incredible pastoral rabbi. And into the shiva walks a non-Jewish, very prominent cardiovascular surgeon. And he sits down and he tells Rabbi Avitan's children, you know, to a certain extent, he says, "I never go on these condolence calls, but I owe my career to your father." He didn't seem to know what it was about. And he tells this story that I found out later, he's one of the leading cardiovascular surgeons in the world. And his brother, at the age of 40, dies of a sudden heart attack. No history of anything. And this doctor develops a tremendous crisis of confidence. And he's in a state of yish. And he decides, what good am I? Here I'm saving lives. People come from all over the world to have surgery with me. And what good is it? What good is it if I can't save my own brother? And he retires in depression. But he's just very depressed. The retirement doesn't help him so much. And he remembered he had once done surgery on Rabbi Avitan. He remembered him as a holy man, and he went to get advice from him. And he and Rabbi Avitan had some meetings. Rabbi Avitan explained to him that everybody alive has a unique mission and has a soul with a unique flame. And they have to find their mission. They have to find what matters to them. And they start talking. And together, what they come up with was this doctor connected to a story that he had once read. And the story is called The Three Questions. It's the three questions. And it basically said the following. This is together what they came up with. It said that when you're in front of a person, you have to ask yourself three questions. The three questions are, what is the most important time? And the answer is now. Most important time is now. And lo'achshav emosa, right? Most important time is now. Number two, what's the most important thing? The most important thing, the answer is, obviously, is to do chesed, is to do good in life. It's olam chesed yibana. And the third question, you always have to ask yourself when you have somebody up against you, one-on-one, is who's the most important person? And the answer is the most important person is the person in front of you. Somehow this resonated with the doctor. And he just gets to thinking, maybe I quit a little too quickly. And he goes back to work, goes back to saving lives in a way that he has one of the best records in the world of people when they go under his skilled hands. But he went back to work with one change. Today, when he does surgery, hospital not too far from here, he gathers his OR team around him. He has them all hold hands. And he has them scream out, what's the most important time? And they have to scream out, now. What's the most important thing? Do good. Who's the most important person? Person in front of us. And then he says, let's operate. It reinvigorated him. Brought him back to what matters. You know something? When we parent our children, we have to ask those three questions. We have to remember it. We have to shut that cell phone down, like Rabbi Bender said. We have to remember that kachitzim b'yagi barkeim b'nei anu'urim. We have to hold on to that mindfulness that our children need to understand, that what they see reflected back in our eyes in the kamayim panim el panim is total, total attention to who they are. Because they know. They know when we're preoccupied. They know when we choose to take that cell phone call over them. And they know when we're really there for them, teaching the lessons of chesed and emlo achshav emosai, and that there's nothing more important at that time than then. So that's ingredient number. That only counts as one, Rabbi. Okay, that's only one. Two more. Okay. You know, you said three, but my three have so many subsets, we could end up with 20. Okay. Number two is something that I've spoken about a little bit in the last year or so, and it's this very weird finding in some research that I was involved in, where we were looking at trying to understand what predicts frumkeit, what predicts, what are the ingredients that predict kids internalizing a high level of emuna, etc. And Mechanchim know the answer to this better than this, but psychologists can't help but trying to do research once in a while. It's probably silly, but it's fun. So we looked at a bunch of kids, actually, ultimately 600, and we try to predict. So we looked at, is it family closeness? Is it relationship with Rebbeim? And we threw in about 20 variables into the mix in a study where they filled out questionnaires. And after a long time of working on this, we finally are sitting around the computer and get the answer. We press the button. What's the answer? And it comes out three top ingredients. Number two and three made sense. Of course, it's the love and closeness and time, connection with parents. It's Rebbeim, of course. That wasn't surprising to us. The connection with the Mechaneches, whatever. That wasn't surprising at all. What was surprising to us was number one, because I'd forgotten that we had measured it. You know what was number one? It was Simcha. Simcha. If what was communicated to the child at home and what was communicated to the child in the yeshiva was the ahava dimension, the love of Yadus, not the Isurim, but the love, a Shabbos with Smiros, a Shabbos with Kedusha, sitting down with your child, as one of my colleagues say, and learning with them, where the main purpose of learning with them is to constantly interrupt yourself and tell them how much you love them and how great a job they're doing. Regarding, you know, that's the main thing. That, it turns out, was the number one predictor. It was Simcha. There are many Ma'amori Chazal, right, that say this. There's nothing surprising about it. But, you know, I think I said over not too long ago this incredible study related to the election where psychologists has his graduate students rate every nominating speech given by the winner of the Republican nomination and the Democratic over the last 100 years, strips it of identifiers, rates it only for optimistic statements versus pessimistic statements. So, and then had his graduate students rate it, and it turned out that it had nothing. It was just purely how optimistic is the person in their victory speech. It turns out the level of optimism predicted who would be president at a far greater level of accuracy than any poll did over the last 100 years. Who was most optimistic? Who focused most on positive in terms of their victory speech? Okay? So there's that issue. But I wanted to just talk about this from a practical standpoint with just a quick discussion, a story and a discussion. First is actually a Dvar Torah, a beautiful Dvar Torah from Rav Henoch Leibowitz, Rosh Yeshiva of Chafetz Chaim, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who has a brilliant insight into what we read yesterday. Incredible insight. It's a Medrash, both Medrash Tanchum and a Medrash Gracious Rabbah that talks about Avram going to the Akedah. And the Satan comes in the guise of Samuel, okay, one of his messengers. And Samuel goes to Avram and says, "What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? You're an old man. You think this is going to happen to you again, that you're going to have another child? What are you thinking?" And what does Avram answer? You'd think Avram would answer, "Hashem told me to do this." He doesn't. What does he answer? "Amanas king, even so." And the Satan goes on and keeps arguing and arguing and arguing. And all the way through, all that Avram answers is "Amanas king, even so." So Rav Leibowitz Zal says, it's an incredible lesson. What's the lesson here? The lesson is that when you're certain of something, you don't get pulled into explanations. You don't necessarily have to explain everything. Sometimes an answer is just no. Sometimes the answer is even so. There's a reason why Avram didn't get pulled into it, because it was irrelevant to him. It's irrelevant to him. This is another component of keeping joy in parenting. That's why I'm considering it part of point number two. It's that sometimes what poisons a parent-child relationship is when we fight over, we have to set limits, like Rabbi Bender said, right? The key to parenting is the balance between love and limits, between the small docha of yumim karevis. We know that. But we also need to know that after we explain to our kids once the reason why the answer is no, and they're pulling us into endless, okay, endless kinds of arguing, sometimes the answer is just almanaskein. Even so. You know, even so. If you want a quick technique, something that works a lot, I hear all the time from parents, is the rule of three. The rule of three is you tell them, after you explain it once, you could ask me three more times. Okay? The first time they ask, say, okay, that's once. Don't get pulled into an argument. Just say that's once. Don't explain. Just say that's once. That's the equivalent of almanaskein. Second time, say that's twice. You have one more time you could ask me. Without anger. Don't reflect back the kamayim panam el panam anger. Don't. And then the third time, you say that's three times. Fine. And now I'm going to ignore you. It brings a certain amount of humor into the interchange, and it works, not with every kid, but it actually is not a bad thing, totally consistent with that medrash. A story to end ingredient two, then we'll go to ingredient three and the end of the talk. Story is, I spoke somewhere about the power of optimism and the power of joy in chinuch, and how we have to focus on that so much. And I was in a community where I was speaking for Shabbos, and my host was walking home with me, and he seemed to be contemplative, and he said, he was thinking. He said, you know something? He said, you reminded me of something. He said, I think to a certain extent some people have to work at it. He said that he himself had to work at it. But he said his mother was born with an inherent sense of optimism and the positive. He told me the following story. It's an amazing story. He said his mother, who Baruch Hashem is still alive, an older woman, she was sent to Auschwitz at age 15. And she told him that as she was selected to go into the camp, 15-year-old girl, and they start lining up to have the tattoo put on their arm, she told him as she was growing up that she said to herself, the second she saw what was happening, you know something? I'm going to have this tattoo for a very long time. I'm going to have a long life. And I'm going to have this tattoo for a very long time. She's 15 years old. She says, I want to have a really good-looking tattoo. And she looks for the longest line. And she figures to herself, you know what? The longest line must be a real craftsman. This must be a very good tattoo artist. And she goes to the longest line, and she was right. She was right. He told me, he says, you know, you look at her tattoo now, it was a beautifully done tattoo. You talk about the transformation from the depths of the most evil place in the world, okay? You know, the Nes Nisayon dichotomy that we've been reading about in the Parsha, right? That she transformed that into the Nes of her optimism. I think it's a good Nes for us to hold high in terms of the essence of optimism and joy in that ingredient. So that's number two, okay? Number three, and final, is something that I'll end with, and it's pretty obvious. It's that the word natan is a palindrome. When you give, you get back. When you give, you get back, okay? Why am I ending with this? Because it turns out that in much of the research on parenting, turns out that part of the limit setting, part of the small dach is we have to push our kids to do chesed. We have to require them. It starts with having them do chores. There should never be a magia li in their lives. And they should be pushed to do staka, the way that I was talking about. In every study on resilience, they show that pushing kids to do chesed, requiring it of them, is actually absolutely essential in terms of raising our child to be a mensch, and an absolutely essential ingredient to parenting. And I could develop this in many ways. Quick study, and then I'll end with the story. The study is the study of, they take a group of people with multiple sclerosis, and they divide them into two. And they have exactly the same level, severity of multiple sclerosis. But they randomly assign one person, say, you have to take care of this other person. You have to call her, you have to pick her up, take her to the doctor, you have to check on her on a regular basis. Another person was a makabel. One was a no-sane, one was a makabel. They're just sick. The no-sane, it turned out, not only did they emotionally do much better, but their physical symptoms actually improved relative to the makabel. Didn't mean that they were cured, unfortunately, but it meant that they did better with their illness. Fascinating. Natan is the palindrome. Palindrome is a word that's the same forward and backwards. You give, you get back. You give, you get back. Let me end with this story. Let me ask you, because there are two stories I could end with, is one I've been using lately because I love it, but a lot of people have heard it because it's such a good story. It makes it through the rounds. The blind woman story. How many of you have heard the story about the blind woman who moves into the Hasidic neighborhood? Nobody. Wonderful. So I get to say it. Only Rabbi Cohn and maybe one or two other people. Huh? I can say both. I'm not going to end. You have to know when to end. Okay. It's been a long day for people. And with this, I'll end. Such a nice story. It's too good a story to not end with. And it's even true. Okay? So, as opposed to everything else I've been saying. Okay? So, and it's about Natan as a palindrome. I'm sorry, I had eye surgery, so I still don't have the right glasses that I figured out what to. So I apologize for the weird changing of the glasses. People think I've lost it. Okay. So, okay. Shoemaker's children. Anyway, so it goes like this. I sometimes see that it's the kids in the more, in the less affluent neighborhoods that chesed is built into the life. You have to do it in a less affluent neighborhood. So there's a chassidish woman who I've worked with on a number of projects, wonderful woman, and she lives in a very poor part of our, you know, global community. She tells me the following story about her 9-year-old daughter. She's a very shy girl. She has a large family, Bli Ayin Hara, and a blind woman in her 60s moves into the house, the apartment building next door. Turns out she's totally isolated, totally isolated. She doesn't have parents, she never married, she has no children, no extended family, and she's blind, blind from birth. So my friend, you know, Olam Chesed Yibana, she assigns each of her children a certain thing to do, and she takes her shy 9-year-old daughter and she says, listen, she says, your job is, go over to the apartment building next door, you have to read to this woman twice a week. Twice a week, read to the woman. She's lonely, she needs it. A shy little girl, I'm sure, could live without it, especially at age 9, you know, but, you know, it's too bad. You know, she had to go. She had to go. And my friend knows Natan's a palindrome. So she goes 2 nights a week, has no choice. And after she develops a relationship with the woman, after a couple of months of this, she finishes reading to her one night, and the woman signs and says, you know something? 2 more years. In 2 more years, I'll be able to see. So the little girl asks her, what do you mean, Mrs. Schwartz? Mrs. Schwartz says, well, 2 more years, I'm going to get Social Security. I'm going to be 65. And I'll be able to get some more checks in. I'll be able to save up money. A doctor once told me, they have new surgery now, laser surgery, that with that surgery, I could see now. When I was born, they couldn't fix it, but they could fix it now, but I can't afford it. But in 2 years, I'll be able to start saving up. Little girl doesn't say anything. She doesn't tell anybody. She goes to her yeshiva the next day, okay? And she goes from class to class, overcoming her shyness. And she mumbles. She says, a blind woman in the building next to me needs an operation. I need money. Next class. Blind woman, building next to me needs an operation. I need money. Goes to every class. Doesn't ask the principal. Doesn't ask anybody. She just goes. She comes running to the apartment building right after school and goes to poor Mrs. Schwartz. She says, Mrs. Schwartz, I have the money. I have the money, and in a crumpled envelope, she has 83 singles. And she takes Mrs. Schwartz, who has a cane, around the corner, there's a from ophthalmologist, and she plops Mrs. Schwartz down in the from ophthalmologist's office, and he waits, you know, he's finishing up with his office hours, and he comes out to see the strange scene of a 9-year-old girl and a clearly blind woman. He calls Mrs. Schwartz in, does an exam, says, Mrs. Schwartz, there's no reason for you to be blind. I can fix this. And he checks her in the hospital. And he does the surgery. And she has rehab. You have to be trained to see after you never see. Your brain doesn't know it could see. And after all that time of rehab, Mrs. Schwartz comes back to her block. And what's the first thing you would do? Yes, I want to go thank that little girl. And she's shown where the little girl and her mother live. And she goes in, and my friend had no idea what her daughter had done. She had no idea. And she thanks my friend, she thanks the little girl, And my friend, of course, is incredibly proud at her daughter. And she thanks her and she hugs her and she says, I'm so proud of you. But she realizes she's incurred an incredible debt. This surgery did not cost $83, right? Probably costs more, maybe $83,000 with that in the rehab, but not $83. So she goes, my friend who's not well off, goes to the doctor. She waits her turn, waits till the very end, and she introduces herself to the doctor, and she says, look, she says, I know that I have a tremendous debt to you. She says, I'm going to pay it. I want to pay it. Put me on a payment plan. It may take me 10, 15 years. I'll pay you a little bit at a time. I don't have money. She's an almana. But she says, just give me time. Maybe I'll raise a little money from the community, but I want to make good on the debt. So he laughs, and he says, how often can somebody do this kind of chesed, right? To bring a woman who is blind from life sight. But he says to my friend, he says, can you do me a favor? Can I keep this? And he puts his hand in his pocket, and he takes out the tattered envelope with the 83 singles. And he says, you know something? Since your daughter walked in my office all those months ago, I carry this wherever I go. And anytime I have a tough day, I just dip my hand into my pocket, I feel those singles, and it restores my faith in the world. So that's the lesson I want to leave you with. I think we all want to leave you with in terms of parenting. Parenting, in essence of parenting, can't unfortunately be easily boiled down into 3 ingredients or 300 ingredients, but in some ways it can be. In some ways it is about the time. In some ways it is about the example of doing chesed and requiring chesed of your kids. In some ways it's about bringing the simcha shel mitzvah to your homes. And may we all be zocha to go home and go home and put into play everything you learned here tonight. And thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Dr. Pelkovitz. Thank you, Rabbi Bender. Thank you, all of our presenters and everyone for coming and joining us. We hope that there was some real tachlis here for you this evening, and we hope to see you at future events. Call to.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-one.org. That's priority-1.org, where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.